a real thrill for me on the OHL podcast this week to talk about an author, or with an author, but not just any author, the author of a new book about an Ontario Hockey League team and, unapologetically, one of my absolute favorites, Nick Caravaggio, who is the author of Pete's 101, the unofficial history of the Peterborough Petes. Hey, thanks for making time to do this. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much for having me.
So obviously, by the title of the book, we know where you're coming from here, a history of the Peterborough Petes, and you must have a love for them. What's your earliest memory of going to a Petes game, of the Petes as a team?
I don't know the exact date. It was the 3rd of this month of 1990. My dad took me to my first game. I really wasn't a fan of hockey at that point. I was very young. And when he took me into that famous arena, like as soon as we walked in, there was that smell of ice and popcorn, and I was hooked right away. And then as soon as we went onto the ice, you see the fans in the stands, you see the hockey going on and the action. There's just something about it. Just all that stuff, all just kind of coming at me at the same time was just incredible. And then, it was love at first sight. And we had such a great time together. And it just was just kind of a fluke that we just went to that game. And then we had such a good time that we made it more of a common thing. And then that's one of the reasons why we had such a very close bond, was this was something that we could do together. So,
and for more than 30 years, you and your dad did exactly that.
Yeah, we started going to games more frequently in 95, 96. That was the first year that we, got our season tickets, and we were at the same seats all the time. And that was an incredible year. That was the year, of course, that they had the big year where they had to host the cup, and that whole time was just magical. And there have been a few good years since then, but nothing still tops that.
It's one of my favorite things about hockey at this level. So I have fond memories of my dad taking me to the Kitchener Memorial Auditorium when I was a kid. And I felt, Nick, like we were, I mean, knowing the city like I do now, it wasn't all that far to go from the house I grew up in to the odd, but it felt like we were traveling. We might as well have been going to Toronto. It was such a big deal. And when you've got a team that's as close-knit to the community as Peterborough, as the Petes are, I'm sure you felt similarly.
Oh, for sure. This team is so special, and they have such a huge following, and they've been around for such a long time. And so it's still a thrill just to be a fan of this team.
You mentioned the arena earlier. Can you explain it? I mean, look, it wouldn't be Peterborough without the PMC, but come on with the square corners and all that nonsense in there. Let's go.
It's funny because at the time I didn't know what the square corners was all about. That wasn't until later, but it was slightly different than what it is now. Of course, people could still smoke back then, and so you could still smell some of the smoke in the hallway sometimes, but it was a little bit colder there. Just something about it was a little different. It was more of a like a small town rink, whereas now, obviously it's a little more, kind of spoofed up, but that first arena was pretty special for sure.
We wouldn't want it any other way in Peterborough, would we? I mean, that's the arena you want to have the Petes playing in, and you want to be going to watch it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I know some people, they usually complain about it, but you just get used to it, and I just wouldn't have it any other way.
You talked about, the smells of the arena, the popcorn, et cetera. Now, when I was a kid, we used to, mom would pop some popcorn at home, and this shows how old I am, Nick, but you could take it. We take it in a brown paper bag into the arena with us. We would pop our own popcorn. Do you have a go-to snack at the PMC?
It's popcorn. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not as good as it used to be, but it's still, it's still pretty good. So,
yeah, I think part of that depends on the company you're with too. You never know.
That's true. Yeah. I can never finish those bags on my own anymore. So I need help. So,
okay. So how does a guy who's obviously a fan and has been for some decades of the Peterborough Petes decide to write a book about the team?
Oh, it's just something I always wanted to do. It's just something that's just been on my bucket list for a long time. I think one of the things that a lot of us have taken from the past few years with the pandemic is that life is short and it's unpredictable, and you just never know what's going to happen. And so this is something that's been on my mind for a long time, and I wanted to give it a try. And I didn't know what I was going to write about, and then I just kind of thought about things sometimes, and then I would think that, well, I mean, outside of feet, this is what I'm really passionate about. I love the piece. They've been such a big part of my life, and so I just wanted to write about it because it was easier for me to do that, and so that's why I did it.
Well, if I may, that seems like a rather modest way to describe your undertaking here, because I don't know, Nick, that everybody decides that if they do have a book in them, and I'm sure many of us think we might, but more than 300 pages, and it's called Pete's 101 because there are 101 different stories or essays that make up this book. That is no small feat, sir.
Oh yeah, thank you. Like it wasn't supposed to be like this at the start. So at the start, it was mostly just going to be a collection of, stats and figures and the odd story thrown in here and there, because I'm not a hockey guy. I never played at a high level. I would have liked to play for the Peets, but they never called me back. So I played house league, so that was the furthest I went. But so I didn't know any of the big names or any of that stuff. I knew a few people in town that were with them, and so those were the few that I talked to, and from there it just kind of spiraled. And then I was never a big guy to actually talk to people. That's just not what I was used to doing. And the more you talk to people, the more you just you kind of go away from the interview process, and you just talk to them, you ask them questions. And then it was amazing how many things that I heard voluntarily from these people about their stories and about how they got certain players to come here and all those things that I'd never heard about before. And so I thought that was interesting. And so the book kind of evolved into what it is now.
I'm going to guess that there aren't a lot of places you can go in the city of Peterborough and not encounter either a fan of the Peets or at least somebody that knows the Peets exist.
Yeah, not many. That's they're a huge part of Peterborough for a reason. They've been around for such a long time, and even just driving around town, you still see signs everywhere. I mean, they're in people's homes, they're in people's businesses. There's old ones, there's new ones. They all say, "Go Peets, go!" And it's everywhere, and so people are very passionate about this team.
Okay, so you talked about those conversations that you had and the stories that you uncovered through having those conversations. So, can you share with me the process then of compiling this entire book? Because I meant what I said at the beginning. It's a real thrill for me to speak to somebody who's done what you've done because I'm an avid reader, but the process, the craft is very interesting to me, and not something I think I'd ever have the stones to sit down and do. So, like, how do you go about the process?
Well, it kind of started with a list, So I said, okay, if I'm going to do 101 chapters, let's try to think of things that I could write about. And so I said, okay, let's see if we can get 25. And then I got 25. And then I would kind of take a few days and kind of think a bit more. And then so I eventually got to 101. And then I said, okay, I think we probably need a little bit more just in case I start writing and I don't like how it's going. And so this would be like a backup. And so that's kind of how I got started. And I would just pick away at just kind of one at a time. It was a long process. It took about excuse me, it took about maybe about a year and a half to really get all the interviews done and get the very, very rough draft of it finished before it was ready to be kind of sent off for the first person to read and give me like an honest feedback of how it is. And so you just kind of pick away at it. I was never that guy that would sit down and write a paper in like 6 hours. I couldn't do that. I would just do like a little bit at a time and just pick away at it whenever I had time.
So, how long a process has this been?
Just over 3 years. So I started just before the pandemic. That's when I was starting to start to talk to people. And then during the pandemic, most of us had some time off. So I had about 3 months off where I wasn't doing anything. So that gave me a good opportunity to get a lot of that finished. And then for the past year, year and a half, it was a lot of back and forth, just going over it and sending it to people and sending it back and whatnot. So it's a long process, but it's I'm just glad it's finished.
Do you remember what the first idea was that you jotted down? The first story that you thought should be in your book about the Peterborough Petes?
Wayne Gretzky, because everybody talks about him, and some people know this, some people don't, that he played for the Petes, not for like a whole season, but only for 3 games. And I thought that would be a funny chapter because there's a lot of kind of mystery as to why he only played 3 games, why he never came back. So there's a lot of that. And so I thought that would be a really cool chapter to start from because I just kind of wanted to really set the record straight on that.
So, in mentioning that, you remind me of a good friend of mine in the Ontario Hockey League and somebody I know that you approached to write the foreword to your book. And I would not have known the Wayne Gretzky story had I not run into this friend one night before a Petes game. And you got to understand, Nick, so I have a job to do as a broadcaster, and one of the most important things is to show up on time, because if I'm not, then there's a whole hell of a lot of dead air and nobody wants
Course.
that. And so wouldn't you know, I see Jeff Toohey, our mutual friend, at the arena, and he takes me into that little Hall of Fame. And he starts telling me all the stories. And that's where I first got the Gretzky story and a host of others. And finally, I had to say, Jeff, like, I got to get back upstairs and be on the air in like 90 seconds. Nice to see you, but I got to run.
It's pretty incredible. Yeah, I was so fortunate for him because again, like I didn't know him very well. Of course, I've seen him around many times, and then I just kind of ran into him. I guess it would have been 3, 4 years ago. We actually go to the same gym, and I would see him around in the mornings. And of course, I always knew who he was, but I'm a pretty shy guy, right? So I don't normally kind of go up and talk to random people. And so one day I just said, okay, I'm going to talk to him today. And so I just went up to him and just kind of told him who I was and saying, hey, I'd love to talk to you and ask you some questions with the Pete's. And he was so generous and so welcoming. And we had a pretty good little time talking. We probably talked about maybe 4 or 5 separate times throughout like the years. And he was tremendous. Yeah, I can't say enough good things about him.
Same here. And obviously, you picked the right subject. I mean, I'm sure he showed you his tattoo, right?
He did, yeah.
Jeff Toohey, the man with a Peterborough Petes tattoo. This is a thing. Okay. So, for those that may not be as fortunate as you and I, Nick, what is the Wayne Gretzky story? How is it that he ended up playing those 3 games for the Petes and registering his first OHL points there?
Yeah, so is based on the research that I found out anyway, is that he played for a farm team of the Petes. We're not really a farm team, but they had some kind of connection with them. And he was, I think, 14 or 15 at the time. And they called him up because you could actually do that throughout kind of during that time. And so they called him up 3 separate times throughout the year. I think it was 75, 76. And he played 3 separate games, and he got 3 assists. And so and then they would kind of send him back to where he was in Toronto, and that was it. And then he was supposed to be drafted that spring, I guess, but he went 3rd overall. And so everybody says that the Petes cut him, or that we didn't like him, we didn't think he was good enough. That's what some people think, which is odd. And but the truth of the matter is that I'm sure the Petes would have loved to have got him, but he got picked before the Petes could get him. So that's the kind of Coles Notes version of it.
One of my favorite links, and I didn't know this as a kid. I only learned this as I got into the league a little bit more. So maybe this explains why, when I was a kid, I always felt this connection. I think I was telling you off the air that when I went to hockey games at the Kitchener Memorial Auditorium as a child, I always looked forward to the Petes coming to town. There was just something about the Peterborough Petes. And to this day, even though I still work in Kitchener and broadcast Rangers games, I've said without apology that the Peterborough Petes have the best uniform in the league. I just love the maroon and white. I love that simplistic logo across the front. For me, it doesn't. And the Peterborough Petes actually were the Kitchener Canucks before Kitchener let the franchise go, and off it went to become the Peterborough Petes.
I'm still a fan of those jerseys that they had back in the 80s and 90s. I mean, that's probably because that's when I first saw them. So of course I'm going to have some kind of connection to that. They had those for about maybe 20 years or so, and then they kind of shifted away from that for a few years. But now they're sort of back to what they were before. But it's I still miss the ones from the 80s and 90s. I still think those were the best.
So going back to that team, kind of coming from Kitchener, early 1960s to Peterborough, and here we are 60 plus years later, and the team is still there. We've seen teams come and go from all kinds of places. Most recently, Hamilton couldn't even hang on to a team. What is it that keeps the Petes in Peterborough?
That's the big secret. And again, that's kind of one of the chapters that I talk about in the book. It's right at the end, but there's a lot of reasons. Again, just what I think. I mean, I'm not saying it's just kind of my opinion of it. But I think that's it's a combination of a lot of things. I think it's the way that the ownership is. They're not owned by one owner. They're owned by a small group of people whose only goal is to keep the team in Peterborough no matter what. Whereas if they had an owner, you know, I'm sure they're going to have years where they're going to do good and some years where they don't. And if they don't do well, then they're going to sell. That's what a lot of people do, and can't blame them. And then I think the other reason is they've been successful at times. Of course, not all the time, but you know, they've won the league 10 times. So that's pretty good. And so of course, when you win that often, you're going to have good players, and you're probably going to make money just enough to keep going probably. And I think the third reason is probably just with the fans. I mean, they've supported this team for a long time. Peterborough's funny. I think you can say this about any fan base, but they don't always show up for them, like, you know, on a day-to-day basis, but whenever they start to win, this team, this whole town just comes alive like you wouldn't believe. I've seen this team when they've been at their best and then at their worst. And when they get on a roll and they get going, it's amazing what it's like in town here. It's just, it's so incredible. And everybody gets behind this team. And we saw it just this past spring. Just a funny example. We've had season tickets for like 30 years. Right. And so, there were some games where we couldn't make it. So I would try to give the away to people. And sometimes I couldn't give them away, like for free. People still wouldn't take them. And then when the playoffs started, they started to get on a roll. Those same people would come and ask me, hey, are those tickets still available? And I said, well, no, I'm going to the game. And then as time went on, I got, you know, as they got deeper into the playoffs, people started offering me money for them, like hundreds of dollars, because, you know, I've heard of stories of people spending like almost $1,000 for a pair of tickets for this team. And so that's kind of why I think this team has lasted so long. It's just because of just the history of them. And they've been so successful for the most part. Obviously they're not going to win all the time. And they have a really good fan base.
Was the city, Nick, ever in danger of losing the team? Did it ever come close to folding over the decades?
Sure, yeah. There were a few times. There wasn't a lot known about it. Like, even when I was doing the research for this, I got some of the story. I didn't get the whole story. But it has happened a few times. And then, of course, there was one incident just a few years ago with the pandemic. They had an issue with that. And so that's one of the things that I do talk about in the book. But, yeah, they were close a few times.
One of the other things that people may know kind of generally about the team is the affiliation with the Montreal Canadiens way back then. But if you're affiliated with the Montreal Canadiens, how do you end up in the Eastern Ontario city of Peterborough?
I think that they wanted to, have a team that was, sort of between Montreal and Toronto. I think that's kind of where they were kind of going with that. And so Peterborough just happened to be just like the right place at the right time as they were looking for a new city. Because they just started building the this famous rink that we have now. And so they thought, okay, well, if they're going to build this new rink, that should be the best spot. And so I think there was a lot of factors at play, but I'm pretty sure that was one of the big ones, that rink just happened to be built at that same time. And so they wanted to, some kind of city that was between Montreal and Toronto, and so Peterborough seemed like the best spot.
So literally, it turned out to be the right dot on the map.
Yeah, basically. What I've learned anyway. I mean, I'm sure that people might question that, but that's the information that
Sure.
I got.
Is there anybody that you wished you could have talked to for the book, but you were unable to?
Roger Nilsson. He was such a big part of this team. I think, of course, there's a big chapter in the book about him, of course, because he was very important to this team. A lot of people that I spoke to spoke very highly of him. Like, most people either knew him or kind of coached with him or played with him, and they spoke incredibly highly of him. And he just seemed like such a great man, very interesting man. And he I think he would have been really very, very neat to talk to. But I think his voice is in this book a lot, based off of all of the talks that I had with people. So.
It's funny because speaking of people speaking highly of Roger Nielsen, Jeff Toohey, who's a previous guest on this podcast, spoke very highly of Roger, who, of course, hired him. And as Jeff told the story, Roger Nielsen helped furnish his first apartment in Peterborough.
Yeah, I know, I heard that one. No, that just goes to show you just how nice of a guy he was. I mean, he just liked to help people. I mean, that's the vibe that I got from talking to people,
Sure.
was that he just loved to help people. He loved to just be there for them, and I think that was him in a nutshell. And so I'm not surprised that he would do things like that.
So you mentioned earlier, Nick, that the 10 league championships that the Peterborough Petes have won, and you became a fan in those. We started going regularly in the mid 90s when 96 they're hosting, and of course, you get the automatic berth. But here's the thing, and you probably know where I'm going with this, and I'm sorry, but it's just the reality. The one, I'll bet you, were you even born in 79? I bet you weren't. Yeah, so the one that they won, Bobby Atwell's goal to win it for him in 79, is the other nine have been very elusive
Yeah.
to the Peterborough Petes. Is there any kind of Chicago Cubs-esque sense of lovable losers with the Petes?
Think so. I mean it's so odd. It's just yeah, like it's odd that they've been to the Mem Cup 10 times and only won once. But it's that tournament is so unique, and that just so many things have to go right for you, right? I mean it's like a one game final where anything could happen. I mean, you can be the best team in the country and lose like two games all year, but in the final, it's just not your day. And so I think that happened to Peterborough a few times, where they were like the dominant team and they just ran into bad luck or a bad bounce or whatnot. And so yeah, I think, who knows why, but it's just sometimes it's just not their night, and it just wasn't their night on like eight of those times when they lost.
That's a very good outlook. But you know what? You make such a good point when you talk about the Memorial Cup and the kind of tournament that it is. After you go through the wars, if you will, of winning your league, the Memorial Cup, dare I say, is almost an afterthought after all of it.
It is, yeah. And it's odd because I don't really know if the players if it's over for them after they win the OHL and the Mem Cup is just, it's just a bonus, or if that's like the actual goal is to win the Mem Cup. I mean, that's a thing that, again, I've heard, kind of back and forth from people that no, like they want to win the OHL and that's like their main goal, and then the Mem Cup is just a bonus, but they won't be too sad if they lose, kind of thing. And so who knows if that's what it is or not, but yeah, it's just one of those things that they, for whatever reason, they've only won once. But We have been to the finals like a lot more times than that, and so again, it's you still have to tip your cap to them, just how hard it is even just to get to the finals. So
Absolutely. Here with the Kitchener Rangers, it's been six times to the
yeah,
finals. So you
good
got,
work.
right? And it's also a proud, long-standing franchise, only about a year behind the Peterborough Petes in terms of overall history. I'm going off the top of my head here, but I think so. You mentioned that 95-96 season. That was the seven game final against Guelph, wasn't it? Where the road team. Yeah. Okay. So how vivid are your memories of that OHL final? You must have been like the first year you're fully invested. You must have been losing your mind.
Oh gosh, it was wild. I mean, that was such an odd year because they didn't have like a great team. Like their team was good, but it wasn't a very good team. And then they just kind of came alive after they hosted or were once they found out they were going to host. They just went on a roll the whole playoffs, and then they beat, I think, the last three teams in the playoffs were all kind of ahead of them. And so once they got to Guelph, it was odd because I don't think any team won at home. I think they all won on the road that year. And I remember, there was no TV to watch those games back then. It was all just on radio. And I remember just being huddled around the radio with my dad and my mom, who was really into it too, just listening to that. And of course, we all went nuts when they scored in game seven in overtime. That was pretty incredible.
Who was calling your games then? Do you remember?
That's a good question. I think it was Gary
Yeah,
Dalladay,
because I
the
wasn't
number
sure
one
if he did the
transfer of
radio.
that
Okay.
year.
Yeah.
We
Because
got number that year, but it was definitely the year after they did it.
Right. Okay. And so that year when you mentioned no home team won, I heard that in an effort for game six to win, the Petes got on the bus in
They
Peterborough and took the bus to the rink just to mess up the mojo and make them think it's a road game.
didn't work.
It didn't work. Okay, it may not have, but on the road in game seven in Guelph, something worked very well for a guy by the name of Mike Martone, who I know you spoke to for this book.
He was, again, that was so cool to talk to guys like that, and for him, because when you're 12 years old, kind of seeing these guys, they're like rock stars to you, right? I mean, they're big, they're 6 foot, 200-pound guys, and to me, I would have thought that every one of them could probably play, pro hockey. But so that was really cool to actually talk with him, like, 25 years later. And we're both adults now. And yeah, that was really special. That was really nice of him to talk about it. And it was funny because after we talked, he said, thanks for talking. This is great to talk about that stuff and kind of relive some memories. And so I think he had a good time talking about it too. So that was
Do
nice.
you keep an eye on his son now, Porter, who's playing in Mississauga at all?
Yeah, he's doing really well, isn't he? Yeah, we're very proud of him. I mean, he basically grew up here, so it's always nice to see that.
Absolutely. So you had to wait another decade, which isn't too bad, all things considered. 06, the team's back to another championship.
That was a neat year because they went through some, I don't want to say tough times, but they. Like ever since the Mem Cup that year, like they never really went that far in the playoffs. They would get beat out in the first round all the time. And then people were starting to get, frustrated and whatnot. And so, and then the year, I think 03, 04, when they didn't make the playoffs, which is odd because for like 27 years, they always made the playoffs. And so when they didn't, that was a big thing. And people started getting upset, and then people didn't want to go to games anymore and all that stuff. And so they really kind of they did something special at the end of that year, which I talked about in the book, that really, kind of gets everybody together. And then that core group that lost that year, that was the same group that kind of came back the next year, and then they started to build that championship team, which they had, I think it was the next year after that. But it all started with that 03, 04 year where they lost, and they were embarrassed. And so I thought that was such a great story that 06 year came from that year, but kind of 2 years earlier than that, where they built everything together from the ground up. And so I thought that was a nice story. And then that turned out to be the most successful year that they've ever had.
So, truth time, Nick. Last year, OHL final versus the Evil Empire. And it's okay if you call them that because everybody knows London Knights, the team that everybody else in the league loves to hate. How did you feel about the Peeps' chances in that final?
Honestly, I'm sure there's a lot of Knights fans that are not going to like this, but I was pretty confident that they were going to beat them. Just it's just a thing in sports. It's hard to explain, but sometimes people they just have their number, right? It's just I mean, I knew that they were a good team, of course, but I just think the back of my mind that I think they can beat these guys. I was more worried about Ottawa and of course North Bay. I thought they were the better team than Peterborough, but Peterborough beat them. But I thought once they beat North Bay, I said, I think they can probably beat these guys. So, and that's what happened.
Well, it just goes to show what people like me around the league really know. I've been covering it for a long time, and my predictions last year were Sarnia and North Bay in the
I
final.
remember that,
Missed it completely.
yeah. No, I mean North Bay was a really good team. So again, just it was game seven, and like anything can happen in that, right? So it turned out well for the Beats, that's for sure.
I was just talking, maybe you can answer this one, Nick, because I was just talking to my partner on this podcast that does the Tuesday episodes with me. And I said, at some point, we got to start looking at the Peterborough Petes this year and say, hang on, like, this is the defending OHL champ. They're not supposed to be
Sure.
doing what they're doing. Why? How? What's going on in Peterborough, Nick?
I don't know. I mean, I was surprised too. I mean, obviously it's a nice surprise, but because normally whenever they go on a run like that, the next year is not very good. And but I think they have some new people in charge now, which they have different ways of kind of looking at things. And I think their coach has done a great job, clearly. And just the turnover there is just incredible. And I think a lot of it is just the younger guys that they've kind of brought up, and then they've been doing really well, and it just seems to be working for them. And then you can tell that they're such a close-knit team, and which is funny because one of the Petes comes and lives with us now, and so we've been a billet for about 3 years, and so you see them come over at the house, and they're so great together, just to kind of see them interact, and so I think that shows on the ice too.
I love that. What's it like? Tell me a little more about being a billet.
It's a pretty cool experience. I mean, I never thought I'd ever be a billet. That was something that wasn't my idea. It was the better half's idea. It just kind of came as a joke one day because, she loves to bake. She's such a great cook. And I would tell her, I says, stop baking because I have zero control when it comes to like a pie or something. And so I said, with these guys, it's great. You can cook whatever you want. They'll eat it, and they won't gain an ounce. And yeah, and then so we did it, and we had such a great experience with our first kid that we had. And you get really attached to them. They become part of your family. And you're there for them at the end of, most days, and they kind of tell you what's going on, and yeah, you get really attached to them. And so this is our second guy we have now, but we still keep in touch with our first guy. He's such a great young man, and we're very proud of him, and we hope that he does well in life, whatever he does.
It's funny you talk about keeping in touch, and it's just been such a short time. But one of my favorite things about getting to know people in this league is how connected they remain to their billet families, even decades later. Like
Yeah.
they're, and I clearly you recognize the connection and the
Sure.
bond
Yeah.
that's created
Yeah.
here. It does
Sure.
not go away.
No, absolutely not. So like our guy got traded last year, halfway through the year, and he would always send me a text either on my birthday or Father's Day saying, "Hey, thanks for being such a great billet dad." And of course, he did the same thing for his mom, and so and that just like it almost brings a tear to your eye because that's so adorable that is, but it's that just shows you just how awesome that guy was, and of course our new guy is just as good, and we think very highly of him too.
You alluded to this already, and I think kind of halfway's answered it when you said this was really at the urging of your better half who loves to bake and all of these other things. But I wondered, Nick, like, is it possible with a teenage hockey player in the house to ever have enough food?
No. It's so hot. I'm not used to it. So, I mean, you come home and you think, I mean, there was a thing there that was there like in the fridge that morning, and then you look at night and then it's gone. And so you ate it and eat it. But you just kind of laugh at it. So it is what it is. And no, but I mean, we're very fortunate that we're actually able to do that, because I'm sure some people can't. But no, we'll do it as long as we can. And like you don't do it to make money. Of course, it's more of just a service for the team, and of course for the city too. So,
Absolutely, it is. And kudos to you for doing it, because I've got the utmost respect for opening up your home to a stranger. I know you become like family, but in the beginning, there's got to be a little bit of, getting to used to one another there, getting to know one another.
No, but that goes by pretty quick. I mean, I think it's a little different because we're a little younger than most billets. Most billets, they're 60. Seven, in that area, we're younger, right? So I think maybe that plays into it a little bit, where we're closer in age to them. So I think that could be it.
Of the 101 stories that you tell in Pete's 101, as we get back to the book you wrote, is there a favorite?
Just talking about, I think, the 95 96 season, that was so special to me, because that I mean, that was the first year we ever really went to like every game. You got to know the players, not all of them, but most of them, and that whole experience was just incredible. That whole year, just being in school and kind of seeing all this unfold, and of course going to the games. And so that was fun to actually write about that. So I didn't have to research much on that one, because it was all from memory. So like, I knew the scores of pretty much every game. I know who scored some of them and whatnot. But yeah, that was a fun part.
I know, Nick, that you lost your father early during last season, and it was you and he that had bonded by going to games for the Petes. It must have meant that much more when they went out and won another championship last year.
Yeah, very special. I think he would have really liked that, of course. But no, I mean, he was there when they first got here. So I mean, if he was kind of luckier than me, he actually saw them win like a Mem Cup. Maybe that'll happen in my lifetime, but no, I mean, he was very proud of them. And he got to know like a lot of them very well. And they of course knew him very well. And yeah, I mean, we're still gonna miss him, of course, at the games, but each time we go there, I'm always kind of reminded of him. So that's always nice.
There was a puck that you got at that first game that ends up on the cover of this book. Is that
Right.
how it works?
That's right. I just kind of that puck was in our little trophy case for like 20 years, and then I was looking and thinking what would be a good thing for the cover, and I thought, well, that'd be a good idea, because I just love that logo, like that logo again for the 80s 90s. That I thought that was that's such a cool logo, and I thought that should be right on the cover, so that's why I did
Absolutely.
it.
So in the 101 Pete's stories, is one of them, or maybe more, got to do with that rivalry down, what is it, 35-115? And that's a team in Oshawa that we know about,
Yeah,
right?
of course. Yeah, of course. There's two, actually. I was that arrogant. I would do two. But so one talks about the actual rivalry between Oshawa and Peterborough, and then one talks about a little incident that happened in the early 80s, where some words were exchanged, and some fists may have been exchanged. So that I kind of talk about that, because I think that was an important moment.
Yeah, and that rivalry, I still list it, Scouts Honor, as my favorite rivalry in the league, because I still think with the history behind it, we've still got a little bit of that, despite the fact, like, what the heck are you guys doing making trades this year? Like, that doesn't make any sense either.
I know. It is what it is. But no, that's such a unique rivalry. Like, I think it's not as intense as it once was. With the fighting, of course, is a lot different. But it's still there. I mean, they still like flat out don't like each other. I mean, that's what my player told me last year, even the year before. So yeah, we don't like them, and that's they've kind of grown into that just from just from other players telling them this is our rival, we don't like these people, and so I think it's like a generational thing where they've always had a rivalry, and so I think that will always kind of go on.
I remember Jeff, not to make it too much about him. He's getting a lot of pub in this podcast, Jeff Toohey is, but I remember him telling me when we talked that, I mean, when they would be going into Oshawa for a game, as they got closer to the arena, the bus would basically go silent because they knew what this game meant against that rival. That's how deep the rivalry runs, really.
Yeah, and it's not just hockey too. I mean, like there's a lot of people that are from Peterborough that worked in Oshawa, so I think that kind of contributed to it as well. So it wasn't just hockey; it was other things as well. I mean, yes, we're very close, just only 45 minutes down the road, but there's a lot of similarities there. And so and but it wasn't just hockey; it was soccer, it was baseball, it was. I mean, I played soccer all my life, and believe me, it was similar. Whenever we go to Oshawa, we those were tough games. Yeah. So for whatever reason, I don't know if it's in the water or not, there's just a big rivalry between those two cities.
Okay, now maybe I'm just weird this way, but it strikes me as a little bit odd that foot doctor, forgive me, is it orthopedist?
Podorthist.
Podorthist, thank you. And the son of a podorthist
Right.
kicked a ball. Like, this is soccer doesn't make sense to me here. Aren't you supposed to be protecting those things?
I know, but that's just not what it is. Yeah, know. Yeah, my yeah. So my dad. When he kind of came to Canada, back in the early 50s, he needed to have a job because at the time his family was very poor, and so his dad got him like a job in town here. So he actually worked for like a guy who basically made shoes. And so that's kind of how he kind of got into this, and people had foot problems even back in the 50s and 60s, and so he started making these little tiny insoles that he would actually build into people's shoes, and then from there it kind of grew into this business that he started in 1970, and that I kind of took over about 10 years ago.
Absolutely incredible. I love it. What, Nick, do you hope people take away from Peets 101, the unofficial history of the Peterborough Peets?
Well, just I hope that they take away just as much history about this team as they can. So I think the whole point of me writing this book was to kind of get as much information about this team as I could and kind of summarize it in a way that's very easy to read, and then that kind of tells people the most important points, or at least the most important points that I think there was, and kind of summarize it in a way that's very easy to read. And so like yeah, I mean, it is a slightly lengthy book, but if you were to talk with the Pete's entire history, that would be like an 800 to 1,000 page book. And so I really tried to get as much information as I could from a variety of sources and try to really kind of simple it down so that it's pretty easy to read, and then people would have a very good understanding of how this team got here, some of their successes, their failures, some of the things they've had to overcome. And of course, some of the most famous people that have come through here, and of course, how they came here, which that is like another funny part. I mean, each person that has kind of come through here, they're all slightly different. Like they all have their different stories, and I thought that was really interesting.
And there are some names associated with that franchise. Like you walk through the main concourse and you see the flags, and you've got Nielsen, you've got Iserman, you've got Bowman up there. Like it just goes on and on.
Yeah, it's just incredible. I mean, I remember when I was a kid. I mean, I didn't know, I was just kind of getting in touch with the Peets and kind of getting to know them and whatnot. And then we'd watch Hockey Night in Canada, and my dad would say, "Oh, look, there's Scotty Bowman. He used to coach the Peets." Or, "Oh, look, there's Wayne Gretzky. He used to play with the Peets. There's Steve Yzerman. He used to play with me." It seemed there's like you could watch almost any game, and there would be some connection to Peterborough. And so I think that also kind of thought, wow, this team must be really cool. If all these people played here, this team must be pretty special. And so they clearly are. That just the names that this team has had play, some of the names that have played on this team is just incredible.
It's got to be, and I'm going off the top of my head again, but when you talk about that, if not the most players have gone on to the NHL, it's definitely like top three or top five in the league for sure.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah,
Yeah.
no, for a while they were the best,
That's right.
but I'm sure now they're one of the best, but that's still pretty incredible. I mean, when you think of the odds it is for a player to even make the NHL, just to play a few games, but not only that, but to have a career in the NHL. It's impressive that there are that many names that came from Beaver.
Absolutely. Really well said. I know that the Peets, I mean, they are very much in the fabric of the community of Peterborough. So is this going to create new Peets fans? I'm not sure they need any more right there in Peterborough for sure. But what about maybe, Nick, could we be creating another junior hockey fan if they read this book and understand the connection, between you and your dad and the team and the community and the game at this level, et cetera?
Yeah, that's one thing that I kind of hope for is that maybe there's some dad out there or mom that can maybe take their child to this game, and then hopefully they get the same experience that I had, because I can't tell you how many wonderful memories we had going to those games. We had so much fun, and we shared it with so many other people that of course were around us, and that was just a thrill of a lifetime. And so I hope that people, maybe read this one day and then maybe think, oh, maybe this is something that I could take my kids to, or even friends or whatnot. And so I'm telling you, I'm a firm believer that this is such a great experience to have, is to go to these games, and just to be a part of this team is just incredible.
How do you feel, like you mentioned earlier about being a somewhat shy guy, and here we are sitting as strangers having a near hour-long conversation. That aside, how do you feel about putting yourself out there like this? Like, Peets 101, the book by Nick Caravaggio, is going to be on shelves and people are going to get it. And maybe my buddy Mike Davies over at the Examiner is going to write a really bad critique of, he wouldn't, but how do you feel about this?
I mean, you're obviously a little nervous about it, but nervous, excited, but at the end of the day, it's just, again, it's just what I wanted to do, and I'm sure there's going to be critics. I'm sure there's going to be people that are going to criticize, but that's just the nature of the beast, and that's just what happens whenever you kind of create something. There's always going to be some criticism, and that's the way it is. And so I didn't do it for the critics or for the accolades or any money that you may or may not make of this book. I did it just for the love of the sport and the love of the team, and something that I just wanted to do personally. And so I just wanted something like this out there, because I've always been a big fan of history and, of course, sports history. And there are many books written about many of the great teams, the Canadians, the Leafs, Yankees. And so I thought it would be cool to have some book about the Peets that was like that out there. So that's what I wanted to do.
I think it's incredibly cool, and I'll do this part for you. It would make a great Christmas gift. We are coming up into that season. Where are people going to be able to get their hands on it, Nick?
Mostly through Amazon. It'll be soft cover, hard cover, and then maybe Kindle. I think I'm just kind of configuring that out, but I'm sure that'll happen. But and then I think there's some places around town that'll probably have it too.
Do you have a literary agent yet? What about book two?
See what happens. I mean, I'm actually getting married in about 2 weeks, and so we'll see what happens after that. But well, I don't know. Who knows?
I think we make our trip through Peterborough. Oh my gosh, no, I was going to say February. I can't remember. But when we do get there, what seats am I going to find you in?
So right underneath you, actually. So we're section C10.
Okay, I'm making
So
a note.
yeah, we always hear the announcer because he's like a few rows behind us, and so it's always funny to see him back there.
I like to joke that those are the best seats in the house, but obviously, when you're a Peterborough fan and some jackwagon's calling exciting plays about the Kitchener Rangers, it probably doesn't go that way.
It's all part of it. I mean, it's just the way it is. Yeah.
This has been a ton of fun. I love getting the chance to talk to another passionate junior hockey fan because that's what it's all about for me, too. So, best of luck with the book, and thank you so much for sitting down and doing this with me.
Great. Thanks very much for having me.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.